दोस्तों मेरे साथ एक ऑस्ट्रेलियाई हैं जिन्होंने भारत के केरला में एक जू डिजाइन किया है। दुनिया भर में मशहूर इस डिजाइनर का नाम है जोन को, जिन्होंने त्रिशूर का नया जू डिजाइन किया है। वो एक लैंडस्केप आर्किटेक्ट हैं और जू और नेचुरल रिजर्व डिजाइन करने में उन्हें महारत हासिल है। लेकिन भारत में उनका जाना कैसा हुआ और त्रिशूर में वो जू डिजाइन करने कैसे पहुंचे, कैसा उनका अनुभव रहा, आइए उनसे जानते हैं, बात करते हैं। So John Ko, first of all, very welcome to SBS Hindi. I don't know when you returned from India, but are you missing India?
Oh, I certainly enjoyed every visit there, yes.
You had been working on a project in Kerala. How did that project happen?
Well, I'm a landscape architect, but most of my specialty is designing zoos. And I work internationally, so I've been worked on zoos and wildlife sanctuaries and wildlife reserves in many countries around the world. So I was known for this specialty. All the zoos in India are controlled or governed, not governed, but managed by the Central Zoo Authority, which is a federal department. And they invited me to come over on two different occasions to give lectures to zoo director training programs that they offered. And those were very well done, and I was very impressed with the way they managed them. They took, maybe 50 or 60 zoo directors from around the country. They flew them into a central location, one in Hyderabad and one in New Delhi. And gave them a two-day training course. And the courses I participated were in zoo master planning and another one in zoo exhibit design. As a result of that, then I was contacted to work on building a new zoo to replace the basically colonial era zoo in Thrissur. And so that's how I got started.
When was the first time you visited Thrissur to plan the things?
The draft master plan that we prepared was done in March 2012. Yeah, let me add a little dimension to this, because I'd like to say we rather than me. I was looking for an architecture and landscape architecture firm in the area to collaborate with. And I had an old colleague named Aditya Pal, who was a student at the University of Pennsylvania when I taught there in the U.S., and then later worked for my firm when I had a firm in the U.S. for a number of years. He was a wonderful Indian landscape architect. And it turned out that he also taught at the university in Delhi, and he introduced me to two of his students who had developed a firm called Idea Design in Cochin. And so I collaborated with them on this, and they're one of the best design firms in the world, in my opinion. They're very open-minded. They specialize in ecological restoration, and they really have a big picture understanding of parks and reserves. They don't do zoos typically, but they're willing to work with me on this one. So we collaborated on this plan.
So what is the philosophy that you work upon when you are designing homes for wild animals or different animals living close to the humanity?
Well, there are many. I try to look at it from the animal's point of view, from the visitor's point of view, from the zookeeper's point of view, and from the community's point of view. So I try to come up with a plan that's best for all of those people, but treats all of them with respect. From the animal's point of view, I've had the opportunity to travel the world and study the animals in their wild places, learn both from field scientists who work with them and sometimes from the indigenous people who live with them, and try to really understand, what is a tiger really? not what's the public image, but what is a tiger? What's important to a tiger's well-being? How can we treat the tiger with respect and help it flourish wherever it is, whether it's As I say, I've helped design nature reserves as well as zoos. And so basically, we feel that the closer we can create the environment in which the animal evolved, the more apt we are to meet needs that we may not even know exist. Hmm. So, you know, nature is the model. So, you know, that's one basic premise. From the visitor point of view or the zoo management point of view, I ask, well, what's the message? Everything we do, the way we dress, the way we conduct ourselves, connotes a message to people around us. And so if you're going to spend all this money building a new zoo, what does it stand for? You know, why are you doing it? Who are you? What's your purpose? And what is it you want the public to learn from their visit? And then once that's established, you need to make sure that everything you design that the visitor experiences underlines and supports and reinforces that message. So if you're saying, you know, the tiger is this magnificent alpha predator in the forest, and then you put it in a little cage, well, all you're saying is, look how powerful I am. I can control this powerful animal, so I'm even more powerful. Well, to me, that's the wrong message. And then from the keeper's point of view, and this is a real problem I found in India, is that if you go to work for a new zoo, what professional qualifications do you need to even get the job? Well, it's not enough just to be a laborer. And I respect laborers for sure. But, you know, this is, you need special knowledge to do this. You need special training. You deserve not only a decent salary, but, you know, professional respect for your knowledge and your hard work. And you need the opportunity to advance professionally, you know, to attend conferences, to have additional training, to do things like that. So all of these things go in. Oh, and then the one thing that overlays everything is safety. Wow. You know, if you're an animal, you must be safe. If you're the caregiver, you must be safe. If you're the visitor, you must be safe. Now, you don't necessarily have to feel safe. You know, you might not see where the barrier is between you and a tiger, but surely it must be there, and it must be adequate, and it must be well maintained.
So you had been working on this project for almost 10 years now. How was your experience working in India? You have worked all over the world. How was your experience working in India and in Kerala?
Well, it's certainly unique. Working with idea design, that was a delight. You know, they had a reasonably small firm of very dedicated people, and they were wonderful hosts. And we took side trips into the countryside and saw wonderful things. So, you know, that whole working relationship was really good. At the beginning, we worked with a senior minister from the Kerala Department of Environment and Forests, the forestry department, who is very dedicated to this. And one thing I always look for is, who's the champion? Because I'm a what I call a fly-in and fly-out consultant. And, you know, I'm not there most of the time. I come and go and try to influence things. But who is on the ground who will see this dream come true? And so we started off with really good relationship with senior people in forestry. But they kept changing jobs and kept changing people, and they moved on to other projects, or they retired and other people came in. So that during the life of this project, I completely lost touch with, you know, who was in charge, and I no longer had, you know, any real contact to help advance it. It just kind of got off there in the bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. Now, my friends, Idea Design, did their best to keep track of it, of course. But they also, because they were there full time, but they also, you know, kept having to re-educate new people who took over the work, project managers changed, and so forth. So it was very hard to maintain the detail, the everything that wasn't critically written and drawn very, very specifically. You know, how do you control it? And then later during construction, Idea Design really didn't have the opportunity to oversee it on a really in-depth basis. And so we just hoped that in the end, it, you know, would come out well, because it was like kind of building a ship and sending it on its way, but not having, you know, much ongoing control. And so that was different than my other projects. Mm-hmm. When I worked in Indonesia, for example, I did a major safari park in Bali. I worked with the director of the company and his sons all the way through the project. There was never a change of ownership, never a change of philosophy, never a change of management. And so we were able to really build in the details, the depth of the understanding. In India, all I could do is try to hope that the overall framework was really sound, and then, you know, hope it worked well from there.
Mm-hmm. And did you get a chance to visit other parks in India?
Yes, I did. Ranthambore, for example.
Uh-huh.
We took the train there. It was a very good trip. Want to mention a man named Brij Gupta, who's been a specialist for the Central Zoo Authority for many years and kind of a student of mine. And he's traveled around the world visiting zoos and learning a lot. And he's more recently gone out on his own as a consultant and working on a new, big new zoo in Gujarat. But he was also very influential, and he was my main contact with the Central Zoo Authority that, of course, had to approve everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the one that took us to Ranthambore, and I really appreciate his support. In Kerala, on the weekend, we took a houseboat tour up on the great canals and lakes, for example, which is
mm-hmm.
one of the really amazing places on Earth that I enjoyed very much.
Yeah. And what is your opinion about the zoos in India now? I mean, are they well built? Are they well kept?
The Central Zoo Authority was installed to get rid of the worst zoos.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done a very good job of that. And so certainly of the zoos I have visited, the four or five I have visited, you know, I didn't see any really terrible things anywhere. So, you know, I thought they did a really good job in improving the overall level. But I've also found that they were very conservative, and they were very reluctant to take on new ideas beyond the ideas that they had learned.
Hmm.
And I think one of the problems when you develop a brief for your organization that is based on stamping out the worst, then you always look for what can go wrong.
Mm.
You know, it's a bias. That is what I might call the policeman bias. Now, policemen do wonderful work, and I certainly have great respect for them, but it's their job to look for trouble, not to look for opportunity. And everything they see in terms of, well, what can go wrong? And so I found that working with the Central Zoo Authority, they were very reluctant to take on the more advanced ideas that I had helped develop in other zoos around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to compromise on some things in the designs because they said, no, that just won't work here. And I tried to explain that, well, it didn't work in the United States 50 years ago either, but it works now.
Yeah.
You know, there's room for growth, really.
Mm-hmm.
It won't happen overnight. And yes, there will be abuses, of course, but there can also be great advances. And so they were very good at supporting ideas that kind of peaked in the U.S. around the 1980s. Or 90. In other words, they really appreciated highly naturalistic exhibits. They really appreciated highly functional, back of house areas. But some things we've done in the United States and other zoos around the world, if you have two exhibits next to each other, the animal only spends its whole life in that one place, but why can't you, if they're similar animals, why can't you let them take turns in visiting each other's place? In other words, rotate between the two. So now, you know, half the time in each, they've got twice as much area. Each area is different. Why not string together five different exhibits that are suitable for five different animals? And then I'll let them timeshare, you know, rotating from one to another. This does take a special kind of design, but mostly it takes a special kind of training, keeper training and staff training and animal training. And they, you know, they really weren't up for that. So I think the biggest, so generally that was the problem I saw in some of the really best zoos in India. They had really large outdoor exhibits, and I'll keep talking about tigers or lions, for example. But at night, they were put in a small feeding cage. They could hardly turn around, and they would spend 16 hours a day in that tiny cage. And, you know, lions and tigers and leopards and so forth, you know, they're mostly active at night. They sleep during the day when it's hot, and they're very active hunting at night. And so the time they're most active is the time they have the least ability to be active. You know, they're most constrained. So one of the changes that I made, and I had seen one example of this in older India Zoo, but in the new zoo, for every animal that had a small feeding cage, also it had a large off-exhibit exercise cage with lots of things to do, so that, you know, when it went in at night, it went into a pretty good place where it could spend lots of time moving around, getting up high, having a good view, lots of things to do and so forth. So I think that was a real improvement that we brought there. Mm-hmm. And the Central Zoo Authority certainly did approve that.
Okay. So my last question is, which is your favorite zoo in the world, John?
Oh, that's a really hard one. Before I answer it, I would like to bring up one other point.
Yes.
I think the biggest constraint that I've seen so far to the development of zoos in India and probably throughout Central Asia is that the pay scale is set up often, usually by the government. And for an educated person, there's one pay scale. And for a laborer, there's another. And so if you go to work for a zoo, you're either a highly qualified person at a mid-level or a higher level pay scale, or you're a laborer. There's nothing in between. So that the people who care for the animals are almost all laborers. And how are you going to attract university-educated people to take care of animals when they're only paid as laborers? And so changing the whole payment structure to recognize many intermediate levels of professional development is absolutely essential. Mm-hmm. And then part of this problem, you know, with appreciating the different levels of professional skill and knowledge is that I kept asking the government through our architects, you know, when are you going to have a director? When are you going to hire a director, you know? Mm. When are you going to hire a curator? Because all the zoos I've worked with around the world, almost all of them, you know, had a director. And I see my job is working with the director of the senior management to come up with their plan, you know, a plan that meets their goals and their vision and help support them. And they say, no, no, you're the expert. Tell us what to do. Well, I don't think that works. I think it, you know, you have to share the vision or help support the vision of the people who are going to be there on the ground for, you know, for some time. And so, and I also pointed out that it takes longer to recruit and train staff than it takes to build exhibits, to build a zoo. And so how are you doing that? How are you recruiting people? How are you training people? And the kind of answer I got, and I don't want to blame any one person because, you know, this got filtered back through many people to me, was, well, we build things, you know, somebody else has to take care of that. We don't operate things, we just build things. Mm. And so what I'm worried about is when the zoo does finally open, then where are they going to get the staff to operate it? You know, they can probably recruit a few trained people from other zoos, but this is a big project, you know. And how, you know, how do you actually operate it? So I think, you know, the fact that the government was divided in all these different departments that didn't look after each other's interests is a real weakness. As far as the best zoo, As far as the best zoo, I'm always reluctant to say, because I would say best for what? Uh-huh. You know, which zoo offers the best visitor experience? In the world, well, probably Disney Animal Kingdom. Which zoo provides the most finance for international conservation? Well, you know, that again might be Disney Animal Kingdom in Florida. It might be the Bronx Zoo in New York. It might be the London Zoo, you know, or a few others. Which Asian zoo, certainly Singapore Zoo, you know, is really outstanding. But also the Bali Safari and Marine Park that I helped design in Indonesia is certainly one of the best in the world.
Well, thank you so much, Jonko, for spending time with us and sharing these invaluable insights. Thank you very much.
Okay, you're very welcome.